You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello. Hello. Here we go. It's the Copyright Podcast.
What is happening? It's Mick. It's Jay. It's the Copyright Podcast. It's a Wednesday night. There's nothing on the telly in terms of football on tonight, so there's nothing to be interested about. Just sit back and let's have a chat. So today we're going to be talking about Gina Wijnaldum. A fully dedicated episode for Genie, and just to engage my thoughts, Mick's thoughts, and your thoughts on, it looks like he's leaving, and you know, it's a big thank you podcast for him as well. But we're going to answer a big question as well that seems to be doing the rounds at the minute: is Genie Wijnaldum a club legend? I personally think it's a stupid question, for many, many reasons, which we'll get into. But Mick, over to you. First instance, in terms of Wijnaldum leaving. It's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a shame, honestly. I, when the talk was coming and kept happening, and it was like, oh, he might be leaving, I was still thinking, oh, he might stay, because he's had some good times here. But I think the bit he said after the last game against Palace on Sunday, that he said the full story hasn't been told yet. I think that was quite prominent, that what's triggered it, because he said he would like to have stayed for a few more years. So I don't know. Something's happened. Not, I don't think it's any nefarious, anything like that, but I just think it's something must have, maybe family life or something like that, that's made him think, well, he needs to have a change and start again. But yeah, it is a shame, because and the question about a legend, I think he definitely does for those 5 years that he's been at the club, because he's been terrific, hasn't he?
He has, mate. But we'll divulge into it a little bit more. But first of all, mate, obviously when we were first linked with Wijnaldum, back in 2016, what was you thinking when we signed him?
I think it was, I don't know, it's one of those signs, isn't it? Because I know he scored a couple against us, didn't he, in that one game? And you're like, fucking hell, he's a good player. He can get in the box late, and he's good in the air. He's obviously got a good shot on him. He's strong. He's powerful. He's got, ticks quite a lot of the boxes, but like you said just before we started recording, we didn't really know enough to kind of picture where he'd fit in this team. But yeah. I think he was like a left winger for PSV before Newcastle, and then he went to Newcastle and was an attacking midfielder. So he came to the club, and we were kind of maybe just expecting more of that, and he was kind of anything but that. He was more of a player that sacrificed himself and his own qualities for the better of the team, and what a job he did. But yeah, it wasn't like underwhelming of a signing. It was kind of just like good signing, maybe a good squad player to kind of lift the rest of the squad up and kind of make everyone else a bit better. And I think that's what he did.
He absolutely did. And I think it's safe to say that he was definitely one of Klopp's foundation players, if you like, where he sort of built the team around Wijnaldum, because he has been an ever-present since he signed in 2016. So for me, him and Lallana were arguably the first names on the team sheet that season. And it was a testament as well, because he played 36 games in the league, one in the FA Cup, five in the League Cup, because we got to the final. So I made a total of 42 appearances that season, six goals and 11 assists, which isn't bad for, you know, a midfielder like that coming. Coming into a new club. And then he's, like I said, he's been an ever present ever since, mate. And I think with the Wijnaldum situation, I don't think people are going to know what you've, you know, the whole thing. You don't know what you've missed until it's gone. And I think one of the things about Gino Wijnaldum is there's been so many times over the past 6 years where when he's not played, it's been noticed, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think he just provides that like layer of support, doesn't he, in terms of like. What we are as a team, I think he was kind of central to all of that, like providing the solidity for the left of that midfield. I mean, in that Brexit midfield, that became so renowned that there was no flashy players in there. They were all just hard work and good, solid players, but it provided that foundation for everything we were good at and for the reason we won those two trophies, the Premier League and the Champions League. So. Yeah, but he was, like you said, he was one of those players that he came in and he kind of, yeah, I think it's him as a player, but also him as a character as well. The fact that he come in and he's not a flashy player. He's going to come in and do the hard yards and not be over the top and just kind of, yeah, be a good role model as well for the rest of the team. Because I know obviously he was captain for quite a lot of the games towards the end when we were fucking had no players left and we still got top three, which is just mental. Still can't believe that, by the way. But yeah, we got the send off that he wanted in the last game, so that was nice for him as well.
It was, but like just moving on for his first season, and you're looking at the 17-18 campaign. You know, again, 50 appearances. You know, it's well documented how many games that Liverpool have had to play full throttle, and when you look at the season's present and play that amount of games, it's a testament, one, to the player of how often he isn't injured. For your perspective of what the thing that you like to say is the best ability is availability, and again a testament to how much of an ever-present he is in Klopp's side, and he just shows that as well. And I think a lot of people appreciate it is when people were in the ground on Sunday, they had sort of a new appreciation for Gino Wijnaldum a little bit, because it's all right watching the footy on the telly, but you sort of don't see what he does, and you sort of see him do the dirty work sometimes and what we're missing. But when you're at the ground, you have a chance to watch him and see the impact he has on the game.
Yeah, and like Chris says there, Klopp said built on his legs and his lungs, and I think he also said like built on his the character that he is as well. But yeah, like those stats of the amount of games he's played is just ridiculous. And we know, like this year, case in point, Oxlade-Chamberlain being injured, Keita being injured, Henderson getting injured, and we, at the start of the season, we were like, fucking hell, who's going to play midfield? Because we've got that many options. It kind of came down to Gini and whoever else was fit. Whoever else was, obviously, the defence got obliterated, so Fab and Hendo went back there. Gini was still on his own, and obviously we got Thiago in, which helped a lot. But he was kind of an ever-present in there, and I think once you take that away, it'd be the same with Salah as well, because looking at Salah's stats, like the amount of games he's appeared in over his years, and he's in the 50s every season as well, and you can't put a price on that, how that being that available all the time.
True, and you're spot on, mate, because Salah's played 51 and Robbo's played 50, so between the three of them there, you know, they're the ones that have been the ever-presence this season, and it says everything. So I'm going to jump into a couple of comments. Chris Kelly bumped him another one. He says he has a few Newcastle mates and they really wanted to keep Gini at the time. He changed his style to do what Klopp wanted to. Absolutely, because he was bought as a winger, like you said before, mate, and it's again a testament to what Klopp does and to the player as well. Dickinson 87, how are you, mate? You okay? Feel so sorry for the friends and families of the 96. Absolutely, yeah. It's not something that we wanted to cover on today's show, obviously, but you know, the circumstances of what's gone on, this is going to be going on and on again, and it's such a bloody shame what's gone on. I think it's fucking disgusting. The government has a lot to fucking answer for, and so does the justice system in this country, Mick, doesn't it? It's a fucking joke yet again that those families are having to go through this again.
Yeah, it's just a revolving door of shite, isn't it? It's just like it gets kind of not pushed under the carpet, but it kind of has, but like it just keeps getting pushed to the side and then the fighting back again, and they just, yeah, no case to answer, which is just the ultimate slap in the face for me. I mean, personally, I didn't have anyone involved with the families and whatever who sadly died that day. But I know a lot of people who did, and it's not even about that. It's about Liverpool as a community, like the city and everything like that. That's kind of took a hit from this, and it's kind of paved the way for like that stereotype of like Liverpool fans and Scousers, and that's kind of, it's all like interlinked and kind of stems from that, which is, and the fact that it was the government and the people involved at the time that were kind of at the forefront of it, that thing that makes it hurt even more, to be honest. But yeah, another horrendous day today, and it's another smack in the face to everyone that obviously that it, they don't feel strongly enough about this, that it can be resolved in the proper way.
Absolutely. But one thing we know about the Hillsborough Family Support Group is that they're there for each other, which is absolutely fantastic, and they just won't let it lie. But again, it's, you know, we're not good enough to comment on such an important topic as well. Just got to keep our fingers crossed justice will get in the end. Yeah, just coming back to the Gini Wijnaldum thing, mate. Again, we just got looking on his appearances and stuff like that. And in terms of his goals, you know, he scored 22 goals for Liverpool. And you think, like, for a midfielder, that's poor over the years. But he wasn't bought as a goal scorer. But you look at some of the goals that he's been scoring against and the teams he scored against. You know, he scored against the likes of Atletico, Roma, City, Chelsea, Barcelona. Famously, you know, Everton. I think there's only Man United he hasn't bagged a goal against, which is just, you know, phenomenal for a team like for a player like him who doesn't tend to score goals for Liverpool, even though we know how prolific he can be for Holland. But again, we've got to stress that it's a different type of game that he plays. But again, there's been some massive moments for Wijnaldum, hasn't there? And I just think, you know, it's like we might as well just come on to it now. The Barcelona game, mate. Aunt Dicko's coming here and said, I'll never ever forget the Barca goals, especially the second one. People literally went flying. Absolutely, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, that moment where, like, you see Gini coming on and it's like his face is like, fucking Klopp, your little
nut. Bench me, bastard.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, fuck this. And then he goes and does that and scores those two goals, and it's just, yeah, that'll go down. Like, for that game alone, he's a legend. Literally everything else apart that game, he's 100% a legend. And obviously, like the other goals you mentioned, like Roma, there was a boss one against Bournemouth where he chipped the keeper. There's a header against City. There was, like, I mean, 22 isn't loads. I think his career high for us was 11 in his first year, which isn't bad, I suppose. But he wasn't able to get that far up the field, was he, in terms of with our rampaging fullbacks? But yeah, the job that he did and the goals that he scored, you know, if you ever needed a goal, a key goal, he was there. And obviously the Atletico game where that should have been the key, like one of the key goals, and then obviously we fucked up with Adrian and whatever else, but that should have been another moment where he came to the forefront and scored again in a huge game.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And you got to forget the Roma goal. You know, he had this tarnished thing, didn't he, about how he couldn't score away from home. And he essentially scored the goal that put us into the Champions League final in Kiev, didn't he, because of the goal he scored away in Rome. And again, there's so many great memories about Gini Wijnaldum, and you could do, you know, a nice montage about that. And I might do that. I might put that together. I don't know. It depends if I can be bothered, if anybody wants to. Oh, okay, just because you said it, my love, I will do it. But yeah, I mean, it will go down as the Barcelona game will obviously be his finest hour, if you like, absolutely, with the bee in his bonnet about being on the bench. But there was we got a message from one of our subscribers, and it was Tomo, and basically what it said was, when does a player move from cult hero to club legend? I have heard a lot of people saying Gini is a legend, but for me, he has a lot of happy memories, but not quite a club legend. Now, again, Tomo's not slighting Gini, whatever, because there's Steven Gerrard and Kenny Dalglish legendary. There's Robbie Fowler legendary. There's, you know, I think legend this day and age is thrown around in a different way. You know, like, Mick, you could turn up at a bar and buy me a pint, and I'd go, oh, mate, you legend. You know what I mean?
It's just like a cliche type term now, isn't it? It gets bandied around a bit too easy, so everyone's just kind of like, yeah, legend. But yeah, I think there is different levels of legend as well. I mean, to make it even more confusing.
Now, he's part of a team and a catalyst in a team that delivers a Premier League title or league title for the first time in 30 years. I would class every player who played in that season a legend because they've delivered something. I'd class the fact that the team went 97 points and won the Champions League a legendary team as well. They're all legends for me. But where do you stand on it, Mick? Because, again, there's the cult hero status that you get with Eric Meyer. You know, I'm trying to build Sean Dundee up as a cult hero and all that sort of stuff. I know it's never going to happen. But you've got your different types of heroes, haven't you? And you've got your certain types of legends. But where do you stand on it, mate?
I think I agree with you, Jay. Like, the team that delivers a league title after 30 years, every one of them deserves to go down as a legend, especially someone who's so vital in maybe not the scoring of goals or assisting, but the way to kind of fit into the team and make the team function as best as they can in the best way that they can. Then I think that for me, that's a no-brainer. I think when you think of like legends of Liverpool, you think of obviously like Fowler and McManaman and Gerrard and Carragher and, you know, all at least hundreds and hundreds of them, Rush and God knows who else. But I think there's a little layer down from them where you think, well, they're like legends for what they did personally in terms of scoring a shitload of goals, assist charts off the chart, and just like producing great moments. And I think Genie comes into that bracket where he provided so many great moments for us, like personally through him scoring goals. But like I said, in terms of the team, if we wouldn't have had him in this team, I don't think we. I mean, everyone's key, but he's just another one of the 11 that was so crucial to it all, because Robbo had that security from him bombing forward. He knew that Genie was going to be covering for him. We had Van Dijk as well, who was also in there. He was another key part. But for me, I hate that term, like systematic player, but that's what he is, and that's what he came to be for us after, like we said, being a left winger for PSV, being attacking midfielder for Newcastle, then being like a more systematic player in terms of just filling a gap, but a gap that was so key to everything that we did. Obviously, Hendo did that on the right for Trent, Genie on the left, and then whoever in the middle of those three. Obviously, Hendo went into the middle sometimes as well, but he was just, he definitely goes down as a legend, but I understand was it Tomo, did you say? I understand what he means in terms of like maybe in between, but for me, if it was like a barometer, he'd be closer to the legend part. But I do see what Tomo means, like cult hero, because he's only been here, what, 5 years? So when you're putting him up with like Hippier, who's been here for like 10, and Fowler, who scored a load of goals, and Gerrard, who was fucking unbelievable every season, then it's kind of hard to peg them in the same way, like to try and think, well, how does that transcend from him to him? But I think you've, like I said, there's different layers to it.
There's different levels. So like Lucas, is he a club legend, is he a hero, or is he a cult hero, or is there a difference between the two? Because he was here a long time.
I think it comes back to this cliche thing about legend. Like, if you sat down seriously and said, is Lucas Leiva a legend, it'd be come back down to, I'd like to have like a scale, and I'd like to put people on that scale, but he would be lower down as a legend than Genie Wijnaldum, in my opinion, although he was here for longer and was more of a cult hero for how good he played for us in
those years.
And his personality, the old unlucky shout that he used to do all the time, and being like coming to England from Brazil and like kind of growing up here and being like completely wrote off, then turning into quite a key figure. You've got to take everyone's story like kind of in a personal vein to try and like
get to the reason. That's a good point, mate, because Biscan, cult hero. Yeah. Cult hero. You know, Peter Crouch is on the borderline of being a cult hero or a hero or a legend because of his personality. Again, personality gets you a long way, doesn't it? And, you know, Crouch has scored some big goals in big games for us and stuff like that. So, it's interesting that. So let's just delve into the comments and see what some of the guys think. So Chris Kelly straight away is saying he's a legend. spot on. And Dicko absolutely reminding us of the Middlesbrough goal. Spot on that, mate, because that came just before half time in a game that we needed to win, which was the catalyst of us getting into the Champions League and having that progression. So it's a really, really good point that. Yash on YouTube said he always scored important goals for us, never dropped his standards, the ultimate goal. Absolutely. He did 237 appearances and he started 206 of those. So that tells you everything, really, doesn't it? Chris says I should do a montage of people trying to fail and take the ball off him. Should get a good few hours of that. Absolutely, I would, mate. Yash said he's the ultimate pro. Dan said he's a legend 100%. A great for club and country. He will get the respect he deserves across the globe once he most likely retires. And we look back on his achievements and what he was part of. And that's exactly the point that we're just saying there. And Dick, I think he's referring there as professionals that you want in your team, Stephen Warnock. Michael saying he's a legend. Yuki saying he's a legend. Chris is saying legends are recognised by other teams and then legends of our own fans. Yeah, there is a difference there, mate. Dan saying big goals and almost ever-present throughout his time with us in what is the greatest team we've seen in the Premier League era. Again, yeah, when do you stand out in a team full of superstars? That's a massive thing. And I think Dan's absolutely spot on there, mate, because it's so important that when you're winning things, it's not just about being Steven Gerrard in a team that is a lot less than you and winning the European Cup. That's why they would say that the team that has won the European Cup and they've won the Premier League is obviously, it's a bigger achievement, isn't it? And I think what Dan's saying there is big goals and almost ever present says everything about Ronaldo, doesn't it?
Yeah, and like I said, you need players who are like Mo Salah who are going to score you shitloads of goals, but you also need a genie Ronaldo, and you always need players like that, and he's one of the best at what he does, like Dan said, or Chris said before, sorry, about shepherding the ball and not letting people get it and like keeping us ticking over. It's things like that, which, I mean, he got a lot of shit for, didn't he? Especially this year, for like not celebrating initially with the Alisson goal and maybe not being completely there mentally because maybe his mom was wandering to the end of the season and he wants to get off and go to another club or whatever. But for those, maybe not so much this year, but the years before that, he was just boss when he was just like unbelievable, like always, like we said, available, like 50, averaging 50 games a year is just ridiculous availability for a player of that quality who plays in that position, takes a lot of bangs and bruises, and he's still always there and always available and always was for those years that he was at us. So we will miss him. It's one of them, and I keep saying Mo Salah because I fucking love the fella, but it's one of them that you don't realize until he's gone, that you, because we'll probably look back next year and maybe we won't be going, oh, we really miss Gini, because I'm hoping we don't have that many injuries that we'd go, oh shit, we need Gini back. But you missed having that in there. You miss having that player who's always going to be around and who always available. And if God forbid you do get more injuries, you've got someone there to kind of just be, well, I'm always going to be here, because they've got that durability about them. And I think that's something you can't, like I said before, you can't really put a price on that on being available that for that amount of time. And yeah, it is a shame. I mean, I wish we were doing this and it's like, oh, Gini's staying, but it looks like he's off to, I think, Barcelona, it. So yeah.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way, mate. And again, just a quick quiz question for you, because I like putting you on the spot, so you can't cheat. Who do you think he made the most appearances against?
Ooh, fucking hell. Against? Man City?
Correct.
Oh, get in.
So in terms of the teams he's faced the most times, you know, if you're thinking about squad rotation, Man City, 13, 12 for Southampton, 12 against Arsenal, 11 against Tottenham, 11 against Leicester, 11 against Chelsea, 10 against United and 10 against Everton. They're the double figures ones who's made the most appearances. And that tells you anything that he's a big game player.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I think when you look at it, when you look at the team that he's faced once, it is night and day. So yeah, it just shows you that how much of a big game player and how much Klopp loved him and wanted him in the lineup all the time. Mick, you just touched on there in terms of what we do next in terms of going forward without Ronaldo. Like you just said, it looks like he's going to Barcelona. There was a bit of a dabble of the Bayern Munich stuff earlier on this week, was it? But it does look like Barcelona is his next destination. Aguero looks like he's going to Barcelona again. I think Barcelona fans will probably really love him. The fact that he's playing, he'll be playing for them now, so he's not playing against them. Be interesting to see what kind of reception he gets. But he'll do well over there, won't he?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he makes Sergio Busquets finally tweet again, because he hasn't tweeted since that night. I don't know if he's locked his phone or he's fucking been kicked out of his Twitter account. God knows, but I hope he's all right. But yeah, he's gonna like Marco says here. Like, he's curious about how he can take the Dutch team going forward in a different role than Liverpool. So he's looking forward to that. Obviously, Marco, a Dutch fella. So yeah, I mean, it's gonna be got a very good team. But I'm curious as well to see how he'll fit into that Barca team. I mean, with fucking all the players they've gotten, and if they're adding Wijnaldum and Aguero into that mix, that's gonna be some good going on the free transfers there. Fucking hell, I mean, they're going to be asking for big wages, but you don't get any better than those two to slot straight into your team, do you? But yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be suited to it. I'm looking forward to see what position he plays with them, whether he plays in the national team, a position of more of a attacking midfielder, or, I mean, I think that's what maybe might sway this decision a little bit more, that he can go and play that role and get forward, because we know he likes to get forward, doesn't he? He likes to score goals. We know he can do that. I think he's got a good one this season. I can't remember who it was against now. Edge of the box, curl the top corner, top right. I can't remember who it was against now.
Yeah.
But stuff like that where he's capable of, and if he's in the right positions, more often than not, he's going to score for you. So, but yeah, I'm also interested to see what Liverpool do, and who Liverpool get in to replace him.
This is the thing, isn't it? Because I get Liverpool's stance on the whole situation, that they probably wasn't going to offer him 3 years because of him. He's in the 30 bracket now, and Liverpool don't tend to do that. I reckon they probably offered him a year, and that's not what he wanted, and then they just couldn't come to an agreement on that. And again, I know Genie was one of the most underpaid, bloody hell, the ball is not underpaid. You know, in terms of the level of the performance that he gives and what he adds to the team, you probably would say he was underpaid and he wanted more money. So, yeah. And there's no denying there's nothing wrong with asking for more money, of course, there's not, especially if you believe in your own ability and deserve it, which I think he did. It's interesting because, again, you know, there's those question marks surrounding Naby Keita. This was his season to sort of grab the brass ring, if you like, and really kick on, and we've not had that from him. There's things that he might go. I wonder if the club have got something in mind, or they're thinking about Curtis Jones replacing Genie. What do you think? Do you think that there's someone on the horizon for Liverpool in terms of the Genie Wijnaldum replacement? I know you can't replace him. Or do you think, because the midfield is going to be Thiago, Hendo, Fabinho, that's your first choice, isn't it? That's your first line, to quote ice hockey. But what would you do?
Yeah, I think those three are a shoo-in, aren't they, to be honest. That's going to be fucking, I can't wait to see that. I can't wait, honestly. But I don't know, like Curtis Jones is, I mean, we talked last time on, I can't remember what pod that was, but about Curtis Jones and about whether he should have been loaned out this year. And I think that the fact that he wasn't is quite a big sign and a big telling sign that he's been primed to try and be a good, better squad player in and around this team. And I think he's proved that. Obviously, he's not very consistent at the moment. There's games where he comes in and he looks great. There's games where he comes in and you're like, oh, fucking hell, he's not been too good. But I think he's obviously still a young lad, and he's got a lot of progression to do. So that, I mean, what better way than this season to kind of, I mean, he had a few ups and downs this season, but that's all going to go down to funnel into making him a better player ultimately at the end of it. So I'm hoping he can step up a bit more next year. Yeah, there's a few names, isn't he? There's like Awar from Lyon. Don't know if I'm saying that right, probably not. There's a Basuma. There's quite a few names like floating around, isn't he? But we just, yeah, I'm not too sure. I mean, spoiler, I had a little chat with Momo Sissoko yesterday. I was trying to get some info on Basuma, because obviously he's a fellow Mali international, isn't he? But you know what Momo is like. He's so unreliable. But he sent me a little voice note, but he didn't really give me anything. He was kind of like, yeah, good player, but wasn't giving me anything, the little bastard. So I'll try again. But I've watched bits of Basuma, like the last couple of games I watched him, because I was especially thinking he looks like a good player. But I don't know. And I mean, it's one of them, isn't it? Like, I don't want to be like so cliche, but whatever Klopp reckons, then it's gonna be sound, isn't it? Because he's going to want to bulk up the squad after this year. We've finished third. Fuck knows how. Obviously, we played Boss the last 10 games and we've done really well, but he and we can't afford a repeat of this year. We need to be strong in all the right areas this year. Obviously, centre-back's the main concern, but then midfield is also, we need to get some bodies in there to kind of bulk it up. And yeah, like City got, like we've said this before, like they're bringing like fucking Foden and Mahrez and Sterling off the bench or whatever else, or Gundogan or whatever. And we're fucking bringing on Shaqiri and Origi or whatever else. So yeah, things need to change. And I think, yeah, there's a big summer on the horizon for us. I'm hoping we can get the right targets in nice and early.
Absolutely, mate. I think it's really exciting as well. But I think, yeah, going back to the Wijnaldum situation, it is heartbreaking. And it's one of them things where when a player leaves, when you want more from him, you know he's, you know, you want him to stay. I think that's, you know, fair play to him on that front, because he's given everything to Liverpool, and I agree with you, mate. I think we've firmly established that he's a club legend, right? I don't think you can deny that he isn't a club legend. And all the people that I've been saying for the last 12 months to 18 months, get Genie out and all that sort of stuff. Well, if we don't get it right in the summer, we're going to notice what we're missing. Isn't that right, Mick?
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be a big summer, because we need to get that spot on. But he's going to be a big hole to fill, not just on the pitch, but in and around the squad. Obviously, one of the captains of, I think he was like fourth captain or whatever. So having that presence and having that personality, having the availability, having the quality on the pitch, he was the whole package. But it's kind of, yeah, I don't know what happened. Like we said at the start of the pod, like he said, he was going to tell his story at some point over the coming week or whatever. So we'll find out more about that and what actually happened. But yeah, it's a huge void to fill, isn't it? And I'm hoping that we do it in the right way.
We will, mate. Before we finish, mate, it might be a bit of a stupid question, but your best Genie moment?
It's too easy to say Barcelona, but it's the easiest answer, but it's the right answer. It's the right, like we said, loads of good moments, loads of good goals. But yeah, that game, and then obviously the final whistle where the camera's on him and he falls to the ground and he's fucking praying and whatever else and just amazed. That's just like, yeah, it meant a lot to him, and it meant a lot to us that he was part of that, and the fact that he came on and scored those goals that he did. And we won the Champions League that night, didn't we? That night the night we won it. So and he provided that for what he did for us, and what he's done for us over those 5 years can't be understated. So yeah, we'll miss the fella.
We certainly will, and we thank you very much, Gino Wijnaldum, for that, and thank you very much for the memories. I'm just going to leave it on a quote Klopp said in October 2019, who said his praise said, "It is just so obvious of Genie's importance. It is both directions, small spaces, big spaces. It is hard challenges, fine football, pretty much all of that. He is the perfect midfielder, no? From the skill set, 100%, he has all the things you need. There was his header against Barcelona too. He is not the tallest, but he's good in the air. He's a good jumper with good timing and all that stuff. It all makes him a pretty good footballer. That is how you should be. It's not my fault he goes under the radar. You cannot ask me why he goes under the radar. I don't set the radar." And that's a quote from Jurgen Klopp, which I just took absolutely perfect. We appreciate everybody that has joined us this evening for the comment. I think we'll leave it there for half an hour, because obviously there's a lot of people that want to watch the match tonight. Come on, Villarreal. Moreno, come on. Come on, lad.
Love that.
And Marco's absolutely spot on as well. We won't sing his song as much anymore. Absolutely. Well, I think his song will probably be what Luis Garcia's song, because Garcia left and we carried on singing that as well. So I'm sure we'll always do a little cheer for Gino Wijnaldum. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we might draw Barcelona in the Champions League again, because we fucking qualify for it. Get in. But yeah, thank you to everybody that joined us in the comments. We really, really appreciate it. For those of you that haven't joined us live, let us know in the comments your thoughts on Gino Wijnaldum. Obviously, we said, is he a club legend or is he a hero? Or, you know, is it the right time to leave? Whatever, you let us know your thoughts in the comments and we appreciate it. Yeah, so that was our little thank you to Gino Wijnaldum. We really appreciate you guys joining us tonight. And yeah, have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Podcast Network.